All right, we are in .NET 4.5 world still, and we're with Layla. What are you going to do? Layla Driscoll?
Yes.
Cool. And actually, I wanted to say that Layla has been the one setting up a lot of these interviews, so thank you.
Absolutely. I'm glad to get our team talking.
Sure. It's been fun going around. And you, sir?
I'm Ashok Kamath, development lead of the Common Language Runtime Performance Team.
Excellent. So today we're going to talk about size on disk improvements. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Yes. So we've kind of coined the size on disk term, but when we talk about that, we mean the footprint size of .NET. So installed, how much of the disk space do we take up?
Okay.
So we're not talking about, you know, the download time of the install package, but installed, the space on the disk itself.
Excellent. And so, you know, my assumption is that it's smaller now than, say, it used to be.
Yes.
Now, that usually means that things have been removed. I would think so.
Yes. So there, and I can give some background as well on kind of size and where we've been, but just kind of addressing that point right off the bat is we approached this goal that we had to reduce the size with the intention of not compromising on compatibility or performance. So we couldn't just remove half of the framework.
This is true. So we kept you very busy.
Yeah, that was an interesting point. Reducing the size is not an easy thing for a product that's already in version 4.5. How do you reduce size? You can't just cut features. And so the first order of business for us was to kind of get an idea. Where are we burning the size? Where is the size being consumed? And so we found that native engine images consumed 2/3 of the size. So it was very clear where we should start. That's not the only place, but that was, we couldn't ignore that part of our disk footprint.
So, you know, this is actually brings a good point up. I mean, when people install the .NET framework, I don't think the first thing we really think about is the fact that we're copying NGen images onto our machine. But it makes sense because you want there to be a blob of machine code that contains essentially already a jitted framework, right? Or parts of it.
Right,
so
pre-compiled down.
Exactly.
So it's faster, you get faster startup, you get the benefit of kind of sharing this across processes where at the framework level that's really common.
Understood.
And so having the native images is a big perf improvement. And so just completely abandoning them isn't an option.
Would be crazy because it would take the framework God knows how long to load up on the first time. So
it was clear we had to start with looking at these engine images and what can we do about it. Now, we could go look at how do we reduce the size of these images, look at what are we putting in there and things like that. But nothing can compete with zero. Like, what if we don't engine it at all? But then, as Layla mentioned, they're there for a reason. They're serving a very important purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge was, okay, how can we... is there a middle ground to be found? Can we get some size wins, meaningful size wins, but at the same time not sacrifice the performance, the reason for which engine exists in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
So basically the notion was how can we make it pay for play? How can we, is there a way we can find the set of framework assemblies which are really used by a large swath of applications out there,
mm-hmm.
and can we engine those and not the rest?
So part of this came from having this initial just assumption that not every we knew that not every application uses every part of the framework,
mm-hmm.
and so the question was, well, is there portions that maybe aren't used that much? And so we kind of went through this trying to figure out where that line was drawn, and we actually got a fair amount of telemetry data about applications, how frequently they're used, and some of the different assemblies and what they use most commonly. And then from there, it was a lot of estimation of figuring out, well, where do you draw that line? Mm-hmm. And so what we were looking at is kind of there's a core set that we identified that almost every app or most apps use kind of this, what we've kind of coined internally as this frequent set. So the set that if it's not there, most apps are going to be affected by not having the native images. And then there's kind of the whole rest of the framework where different apps kind of pull different pieces from it. And, you know, maybe it turns out that, you know, customers who tend to use apps that do this, a lot of them use a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And so it could be a varying aspect. So we looked at, well, so this first chunk, everybody kind of needs that. And then the other portion, maybe that's where we can really get some of this pay for play win and looking at, does everybody need to have the native images or mm-hmm. just the people that are actually using apps that use those assemblies in the framework?
Absolutely.
So So we identified what we call frequent set, most widely used framework assemblies. So if we engine just those, what about an app which might be using something that we chose not to engine? Mm. Are we going to penalize that app? Which does not seem like a right thing to do either. And so, and right about that time, we also had this feature called Auto Engine. Mm-hmm. How about we use Auto Engine to make up for the fact that some assemblies did not get engined? And then we had the makings of a nice plan, which is we deploy Windows 8 with this core set of assemblies that we know lots of applications use. They are engined right out of the box. And for those cases where someone uses an app which uses some assemblies outside of that frequent set, Auto Engine will kick in and engine those assemblies. But what if I try an app for just a day and then never go back to visit it? I've just now consumed more CPU usage. Mm-hmm. So Auto Engine also has this other feature, which is it'll also scavenge engine images if they have not been used for a long time. So this was really good, I mean, for size on disk. Now we are tailoring the disk usage according to the usage patterns on those machines. And that's the best we could ask for. It's totally pay-for-play. Only those who use it pay for it with the disk usage.
Interesting. Now, of course, the framework comes pre-installed on an operating system like Windows 8, in quotes. So what is it that comes right off the bat? Engined.
So which assemblies?
Yeah. I don't know if you need to go through the whole list. Give me like chunks of...
So system will definitely be there.
it's what you can expect. It's MS Core Lib definitely is there. There is system.core.
Sure.
And the UI, most of the basic UI stacks, mm-hmm. so WPF presentation core, presentation framework, those are in there. The WinForms, system windows.forms,
sure.
those are there, and system XML. Mm-hmm. So typical things that you see in most applications, those are in there. The exact set, you know, we will keep monitoring it and make sure it is, you know, serving the purpose. So far, it's been holding up pretty well.
So one of the questions I have for you, I mean, I understand why you would want the, I mean, let's think about this. So the typical hardware today, memory is sort of unbounded. I mean, it doesn't matter. Now, not RAM, but disk space. So can you elaborate a little more on this?
So you may be asking, well, why did you put effort into size on disk, which it sounds like you're getting at.
Yes.
And so historically, it hasn't been something that's been that important to us.
Okay.
We've had, you know, we have, just like anybody developing software, we have a bunch of different constraints and things that we're shooting for. And across the board, performance, make it faster, has been ahead of size. Compatibility is huge for us. So there are all these different constraints that we have that have always been above size. And so if making something smaller happened to make it faster, sure, of course that happened. So it wasn't completely disregarded. But when it wasn't high in visibility or a priority because of the fact that every year hard drives are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Mm. And so it wasn't a priority. So, but when Windows 8 was started, and it was designed from the beginning with kind of this tablet form factor in mind, this really changed everything, because for the first time, hard drives are magically drastically smaller that we're focusing on. And part of it, you can say, sure, over time they'll get cheaper, so they can get larger, and they can, you know, but there is a limit on physical space. So when you have something that's handheld, it does have to stay a certain size. Power constraints make it more important to be smaller. And just in general, you have this new need for a much smaller hard drive than we've ever considered important before. So not only can we not rely on it growing in the future, we have to take a huge step back and look at this smaller footprint. So that was really our key motivator. And it turns out that there are a lot of places when you start looking at it where maybe it matters. You know, it's faster to install if you have more bits to put there.
Sure.
For an OEM, for example, or smaller NVMs. But that was really our driving focus, was how can we get on these really small form factor devices and still make it a great experience and make sure that we can have .NET inbox and a great experience on these small devices. So that's why size matters. Became something important. Yeah.
It makes sense, and it also, I mean, clearly makes sense in the context of footprint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the questions I would ask you is, during this investigation that you guys had, and certainly from the development side of the house where you found which things are actually being used and did the whole dependency mapping stuff that you must have done, did you find a way, did this perhaps help you in maybe the future think about more of a modularized framework where you build pieces, like, you understand what I'm trying to ask you? That's my question, even though I can't say the word very well. So you must have learned a lot from this exercise, right?
Yeah.
In that space? But you can't talk about it, which is what I love. But at least I can ask a question, because it's C9.
Yes, definitely. That's an ongoing exercise to understand how do we componentize the right way. And,
It's an interesting exercise.
And although AutoEngen and kind of having a smaller set of native images that are on the machine and pay for play was by far our biggest size reduction effort, we actually looked fairly holistically in everything from asking the many people on the team that have been here a decade to looking through and searching for dead code, or where, you know, two assemblies had almost identical pieces of code, where we could we merge things. And so we went through a lot of that, and in many cases there was either huge cost for a very small win or some compatibility issue or perf hit, so we couldn't do all of them, but we definitely did have a new awareness and kind of go through that process of looking at a lot of things. But another thing that we definitely did invest in was, sure, we can make it smaller, but we're also developing a new version, and it's very easy for the size to grow, much less, you know, stay the same. And so we did a lot of work to put in a new gate into, so in our build system, and when you check everything in, there are certain tests, which we call gates, which kind of get run right away, and if you don't pass, you basically don't get to play.
So,
and so we did this to make sure, and you can go into, I know you're eager to...
Yeah, so, you know, that's an interesting point, how the we wanted to estimate where we will land once we've done our exercise. And while doing that, we could estimate what we'll save by not engineering something. That's easy. But then there will be feature work that will be happening during 4.5 as well across the framework. And it's unrealistic to say keep it zero. Like we said, it's hard to kind of reduce the size to make some room for adding new features. I mean, it's not going to be practical. So we had to come up with some estimate of how much we might grow, so that we can take that into our planning and forecasting purposes. So one of the things we did was just looked at past versions from 2.0 to 3.0, and you know, from there on to 4.0, roughly how much did we grow? And those were kind of to get the upper bounds of what we can expect. And then we went out to the teams. There were lots of teams across the framework, and asked them, how much do you expect to grow? And this is a question that's never been asked to them. And that's pretty much how we anticipated the reaction, and it really was the reaction. So we had to give them some rules of thumb on how to estimate. And again, we went back and looked at past releases. How many types did we add? And how much size did that end up adding? So roughly, we came up with a rule of thumb. There are always exceptions, but across the entire assembly, it was, I think, roughly about 2 kilobytes per type or something like that. And that rule of thumb held up pretty well.
Nice.
So it gave the team some way of estimating. They won't think in terms of IL, bytes of IL, but types, the idea of how much types I might add. Mm. And that size was, using that as the budget for each team, we put in gates. It's trust but verify. So we put in gates to make sure teams do not accidentally cross what they forecast.
Good.
It's
engineering discipline.
Yes, yes, and it served us well, so far so good. We maintained the
size. And that, when you say so far so good, now are you saying that the .NET 4.5 framework loads faster for me? So tell me, as a consumer, my experience from all this incredible engineering that you guys had to go through, and I could be a developer consumer.
Well, I mean, a big part of it really is just about how much of the disk we're taking up, and
okay.
So. Without impacting your experience.
Yeah, I think the best
really
thing about this is there's no impact. I think
the goal is, if you haven't noticed we've done it,
perfect.
And suddenly we just take up less space on the disk, then we've done our job well.
Great. The other question I would ask you in this case is, and you did all of your research, this pay-for-play notion is interesting. Mm-hmm. When I, as a user, launch an app, and I hit an assembly that's not been engined, I pay the cost of jitting.
Mm-hmm. The
initial runtime mm-hmm. cost, right? But then that's not going to happen again because it'll be stored in an engine image, which will take up more room.
Mm-hmm.
And then auto-NJ could come back if I don't run this app again, which typically happens with apps we download from the internet, doesn't
yeah.
it? Certainly on our handheld devices. The auto-engine feature comes and basically sweeps that away. Reclaims
it. It has a fairly conservative heuristic to determine when to do that. So it's not, very quick. It gives you a pretty decent amount of time to make sure that you've tried that. But the impact of the fact that the kind of core set of the framework is engined
mm-hmm.
means that the impact of the jitting for that one or two extra assemblies in that first that first usage when it's not there isn't really a huge impact. But we really want to move to where we're not having any impact on it.
Great.
Yeah. And, as I mentioned earlier, the set we have chosen has held up pretty well. I mean, whenever we see a new app, we look at, what is it using on the startup path. More often than not, it's already covered by our frequent set.
That's good. So now that we've talked about the sort of the introductory kind of stuff, and I think people understand why this matters, you guys have done great work. What else is going on?
Well, I just one other interesting thing in the execution of this project, which was something we did not expect, we decided that. This is our set, and this is what we are going to engine out of the box. But we hadn't anticipated that we'll get bitten by a feature of engine. When you engine, you can say, you can ask that you engine not only this assembly, but the closure of its dependencies.
Mm.
And so, even though we made sure that we engined only the pieces of framework that we wanted, there were other components in the entire across Windows which were saying engine our assemblies and engine the entire closure. So those assemblies were pulling in rest of the framework.
Mm.
We just had to go change the engine command line and say don't engine the dependencies. sounded simple, but it was an effort that had to be done across Windows, because this was we had to do this for components developed by teams, you know, pretty much across the company. So that was something we did not anticipate when we started the project, but you know, quickly realized this is going to be a problem, and so we could engage all the teams in time and get all that all those things done. So
excellent.
Yeah, so that was an interesting thing that happened during the execution.
Sure.
You may remember more details than I do, but we ran across a few other things that we found and kind of helped other teams identify, like having an individual copy of every language installed in one case, where they hadn't caught it because we didn't have any system to tell you, hey, you're taking up size where you don't need to.
Sure.
This is part of the... so we put up the gates, and the gate is nothing but a test which measures the size. It has a list of precisely what files constitute the framework, and so it measures the size. And this test would catch things that teams missed. So, for example, there are certain files which are localized or supposed to be localized to various languages, and they have a certain size if done correctly. And if something goes wrong, it showed up as a size, you know, decrease or an increase, and we would catch it and check with the team, and they go, oh, really? Oh, okay, let's see what happened. So, again, a totally unintended but a good consequence of having these tests in place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, Layla, going through this exercise of doing all these CLR 4.5 and .NET 4.5 interviews, it's clear to me that that in some sense, this new programming model or this new platform has really helped .NET sort of get lean and mean. And when I say you know what I mean? So figuring out, like, which things aren't really necessary anymore when you think about what the BCL had done, because we've done the BCL team interview, and we learned about some of the stuff that they experienced and removing redundancies and figuring out what doesn't need to be there, etc.
Absolutely. So we were at one bit of, I don't know if you'd call it a disadvantage, but the size work was actually done across Windows 8. So it's not just for Metro-style apps. So you actually get the benefit of that size for your machine and the footprint that's on the machine, as opposed to only in the new model. So
great.
We didn't get to do a full cleanup. We're maintaining full compatibility with that size decrease. And we're not talking about in a really small, you know, we shaved off a small percentage. We reduced the size by 40% plus pay for play.
Wow.
So it's...
That's pretty incredible.
Yep.
That's amazing. And I'm surprised that that question wasn't that, but it's great that you said that. 40%?
To make sure we're not talking about, you know,
wow.
Couple
megs
over
roll.
Here.
Yeah. That's rock and roll. And have you had any sort of situations where you had to undo or increase the size? So in other words, you got it down to, say, 50%, then realize, oops, there's a bunch of apps that use these assemblies.
So we've gone back and looked at the data again and what's actually being run and what's getting engined most frequently. And so we were actually a little bit surprised how right on the line is. Like, we may, you know, add one or two more, but it's pretty much right at that line where...
So
we were surprised how accurate the...
Nice job.
The expectation was. But we'll continue to look and see if any adjustments are made.
Yeah, I was going to say that pretty much the same thing. The Metro-style apps with C#, since they're still kind of getting built and all that, we'll be monitoring that and just make sure that we have a good set and they continue to meet the requirements. But, yeah, if we ever find that there are some assemblies which are used more often than not, then we'll always look at adding that into the set.
Interesting. Now, one last kind of another, I'd like to ask at least a couple random questions. I mean, one thing that when you think about pay-for-play in a connected world, have there been any thoughts of sort of like and this is really coming out of left field, but sort of like a cloud-based .NET framework library service. So in other words, I never bring any of that stuff. I don't have to ever put the whole thing on my machine ever. But it just, in some sense, the portable libraries, or if you will, the min-win of .NET, the minimum set of things that I absolutely need to be able to run just the basic things. And then if, you know, but then again, of course, it requires that you're connected to a network, but who isn't these days? Anyway, these kinds of things, you guys must be brainstorming all kinds of ideas.
Sure, we're always thinking about right that on. And how can you, you know, reduce a set? How can, so that's definitely a thought that's going on. And in this case, we were at the level where the percentage of space that the native images make up mm-hmm. is so much more that by reducing some of those, the size wins that we get there means that we don't have to make it to where you have to be connected or where you ever break compatibility, because you still have the IL. So in your very worst case, you're jitting. So mm-hmm. nothing's broken, potentially a very small performance hit, but you have everything there. But where we would evolve things, of course, we always think about mm-hmm. anything that we could do in that space.
We'll see. I think it's a great idea. It's good. I brought a sheet of paper. I'll make a note.
But I mean, it's just interesting. It's mm-hmm. because you guys have a hard world because you, I mean, let's be honest. The number one benefit of .NET is the library, is the bulk of what it provides and all this functionality.
Absolutely.
The languages are a thin layer on top of it. You should never really even think about the garbage collector or the type clarifier. But do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, and it's a harder thing when you think about that. A lot of apps check for what version is there with expectations of it means that a certain library is there. So depending on how they're loading something, how they're getting a library, how they've made that dependency on something, it's very hard to split away what you have available to you within a space where you're maintaining full compatibility of app to app. So
sure. It
makes it challenging.
So now one of the things I remember, I've interviewed the Windows team when they were under the, I don't even remember his name anymore, he used to be my boss, but anyway, they're not around anymore, that regime. And one of the things they found that was incredibly interesting to them was the dependency map. And the dependency map was the most amazing thing to look at because it took up this whole wall. And the dependency map is so immense, and it was just incredible, the engineering feat to figure it all out. That was the beginning of the project where they basically, the min-win thing that, you know, really was just really that project. That was the whole mm-hmm. point of it. Yeah, were you guys surprised with any of the dependencies you found? Maybe you weren't aware of? Maybe you're like, wow, that's odd? Or, like, talk to me.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise for us was, so we gathered data on what are the most commonly used assemblies, right? And we expected most of them, and we did this on, we looked at what are the client apps, because mostly we were focused on the Windows client SKUs. So we were expecting assemblies which were in the .NET client SKU, in .NET 3.5, we have the client SKU, and so most of them were, except for one, system.web.
Huh.
Why was system.web being loaded in desktop apps? And that was the biggest surprise we had.
Interesting.
And it turns out it's an old, I'm blanking on the exact feature. There was a feature which existed only in system.web. Mm-hmm. Since then, it's been added into another assembly that is available in the client's queue, but apps which were built for earlier versions of .NET still carry that dependency.
Sure.
And so this was the biggest surprise we had in terms of dependencies.
Interesting. But, I mean, it's sort of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, system.web, client,
yeah.
Right? It's all, like, that's what it is these days. So, well, do you have anything else you want to share about this great project with people? I mean...
So far we've achieved pretty significant wins, and we believe that we have done this without impairing performance of all the commonly used applications out there.
Mm-hmm. Which I guess,
speaking of, mm-hmm. if while you're writing apps or testing things out, now that you have the developer preview, if you do see performance hits that you think are due to this, let us know.
Great.
This is the time to let us know so we can adjust if we've made anything wrong that we're not able to catch internally or based on what we're looking at.
I mean, the sort of the telemetry that you have comes from the real world, but you don't have all the data from the real world. There's no way
we do not have near perfect data.
Sure. So
we look forward to, you know, let us know if there's any issues that you're hitting that we don't know about.
Excellent. Well, great to meet you, and thanks for setting up all these interviews.
Absolutely.
And there'll be a few more. I think people will learn about AutoEngen and other things.
Thanks.
Rock and roll, man.
Thank you.
And good job on your team, right?
Thank you.
The development team.
Yep.
All right. Take care.